Okay, we're in the middle of Parakei, the Shir of Devorah. The Shir of Devorah is set as the Torah for when?
Bashalach.
Yeah.
Because
Bashalach has in it the crossing of the Red Sea. It has in it a Shira. In passing, does anybody know why we have a Haftorah?
Yes, because during the times of, I'm not sure if the Greeks had run, they were not allowed to learn Haftorah instead.
They weren't allowed to publicly read.
Somebody
were not allowed to read from the Torah publicly. It was a capital offense. And so instead they read a part from the Neviim that was related to the Parsha. In Perek Chet, and again in Perek Hei, Pasuk Chet, the wording is poetic in Hebrew. And the translation is going to be less than ideal. But it says, Yivchar Elohim Chadashim, they chose new gods. What does it mean they chose new gods? It's an expression for saying that they serve Avodah Zorah. Does it mean they chose new gods? Not necessarily. But it goes on and says, Azlahem Sarim. Then they had war at their gate. They had war. Sharim is a gate. You might have heard that term someplace. The expression to describe the war here is by connotation. And then it continues, Magen im yireh beromach. And they were protected with a spear and a shield. Ba'arbaim elef b'Yisrael, with 40,000 in Israel. Again, the 40,000 is not clear. But the leaps that are taken in the Psukim, they chose new gods, and again, there are many possible ways of reading it. One is that B'nai Yisrael chose new gods, and they had the enemies came to their gates of their city to attack, and they protected themselves, or the enemy attacked with 40,000. Where's the 40,000? And again, that's part of the multiplicity of meaning in the Shira. The 40,000 could be that we know that Sisera had 900 chariots. How much infantry and other kinds, archers and spear units and other units were there? So some of the Mefarshim say the Arbaim Elef were 40,000 archers, and then they go out on and out, and they had 50,000 infantry, and the amount of soldiers again is not detailed. Others say that 40,000 came to Devorah. They only took some of them. But again, the 40,000 is not necessarily connected. We don't know where it's connected. Let me go back for a moment to Pasuk Hey.
Can I ask a question on Chet?
Sure.
In the English, it says something as a question, like, was even a shield or a spear seen among the 40,000 in Israel?
Right.
And I thought that it might have been saying that they weren't even, like, defending themselves because they didn't.
That is another way of learning it. Again, okay. There's multiple ways of learning it. And the nature of the Shira and what exactly is mentioned is very, very difficult. This contains in it the Shira. Not only does it have past information, but it has prophecy and future stuff. And whenever you have a nevuah that deals with the future, which I guess that's sort of redundant. Whenever you have that kind of situation, you have the nevuah is not clear. It's not necessarily precise. You have to wait until it occurs in order to understand what the nevuah is referring to. And so, the 40,000, yes, could be that Israel had enough people to defend themselves, but did not defend themselves, even though they had chosen. Now again, in that, it depends on how you understand the choosing of new gods. If you're talking about the Jews choosing new gods, then it's saying they didn't defend themselves even though they chose new gods. If you talk about the enemies having new gods, then it's talking about the Jews not defending themselves, if we learn it in that sense. Let me go back a little bit until the introduction. The introduction goes back and talks about receiving the Torah on Mount Sinai. It talks about Mount Sinai. And the question is, why is Sinai referred to here? Why would Sinai be referred to here?
Isn't it in a specific passage? It says like the two mountains, something like Tabor and Sinai.
Okay, it talks about the beginning of the Pasuk, Pasuk K. It talks about the other mountains that melted, that became difficult. And one explanation is it's talking about what physically happened. In the war, there was a miraculous victory. We'll see a little bit later on. We see in Tehillim. But the mountains became overheated, and the people could not travel in those mountains. So it was like they became nozlu. They were liquidy. Melted. They translated as melted. But they were liquidy. The ground was almost a liquid. It was so hot, and therefore the Sisro and Moab, the people could not, and Yavin, the Kenani, could not fight. And so some of the Forshim talk about that it is a praise for the mountains, that they were, even though they did not succeed in having the Torah given on them, they were still rewarded and able to fight this fight. Other Mephoshim talk about that at this time there is another Kabbalah HaTorah. There's another receiving of the Torah, declaring allegiance to God. At Mount Sinai, there's a medrash that says that the mountain is held above them. And they're said, either you accept or else. What does that mean? You accept or else. We say at the same time, B'nai Yisrael said, Nase v'nishma. They said, we will do, before they knew what they were supposed to do. So what does it mean that the mountain was held above them?
That they will not receive it, like.
Okay, but at the same time,
Hashem created the world for us to receive the Torah. So, like, if we don't receive the Torah,
but at the same time, they had, they said before they knew what they were supposed to do, they accepted that they had to do the mitzvahs. So yes, we can say that that was an indication of the situation. The world was created for the purpose of keeping the Torah. If they chose not to, then they would have, the world would have no purpose and would cease to exist. But another way of looking at it is, at Mount Sinai, they had seen so many open miracles. Mm-hmm. And they had seen so many things happen that they really didn't have free will. Their acceptance was not voluntary in the sense that, you know, it's hard to say no to something that's so obvious. It's hard to say no when you see God so clearly. But here, they accepted it again. The acceptance here was voluntarily, and they enunciated their belief here. So some people talked about the fact that that's what this pasuk is referring to, that here at this time there was a voluntary acceptance of the Torah, and that was a rededication to the principles of the Torah. Other people talk about it in another sense, that the Harim Nozlu Mibnei Hashem is that the Bnei Yisrael melted before God, and that the reason for that is that because they accepted the Torah, they their will was melted before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We have a variety of other times where we have Kibru v'Kibru. On Purim is an expression of Purim. That on Purim we also again have a reacceptance of the Torah. And that has certain halachic and other kinds of importance, that at Purim time, that was the time right before the, right at the end of the first exile, first set of exiles, before they returned to rebuild the second temple. Okay. We have a reference in Pasuk Yud to Rochavei Osnos Socharot. They talk about white donkeys. What is white donkeys? And then it goes on about other things, but there's, again, the references are so numerous and so different, but the white donkey is used also in another reference, and that's used for the Mashiach. According to the Medrash, they talk about the Mashiach coming on a white donkey. But a white donkey represents it's the white limousine that dignitaries use. It was used by the people that would ride around to judge. It was used as a sign of importance. It doesn't necessarily mean literally a white donkey. It probably usually was. But it was a sign of importance. And here, these are the people that would make a statement, and these were the people that supported Deborah and Barak. In Pasuk Yud Beis, Uri Uri Deborah. Uri means what?
Wake up.
Get up. Arouse yourself, implying a praise in some sense, to wake up spiritually. not just physically. We have that many times in Tehillim. The concept is to arouse oneself, let us say. What does it mean, Uri Uri Devorah? Why does Devorah need to make a special effort to wake up? And again, the Mefarshim talk about the possibilities. Some of the Mefarshim talk about the Devorah at a certain point lost her nevuah because she stated herself as being the Aim B'Yisrael, the mother of Israel. And because she praised herself, she went down a little bit. Others talk about that this was used at the beginning of the fighting, and so that Devorah wished to arouse the whole people, so she had this call to go out and fight. In the next couple of psukim, we talk about who fought and who didn't. In Pasuk Tes, we talked about the scholars joining in the fight. Now we'll talk about several of the different tribes that did different things. Ephraim and Binyamin and Yosef. In this particular battle, came to aid. They weren't called. Remember, we called Naphtali and Zebulun. They were called. But Ephraim and Binyamin, particularly from Manasseh, Machir, was the sub-tribe that came. And they came voluntarily, and they're praised. But Ephraim and Yosef and Binyamin, again, the Bnei Rachel are intertwined. When we talk about ultimate Gula, and again, that's part of what is referenced here. Ultimate Gula, we talk about the Mashiach. If you talk about the different Mefarshim, what are we talking about? How is there multiple times in the Messianic era? Or is it just, you know, bang, the Mashiach is here? Multiple periods.
Yeah.
Is there just... Yes. And what are the periods?
The first is when... There's two Mashiachs. One of Yosef and one
Okay, of, so there's a concept that there are two Mashiachs. One is from Yosef. It's called Mashiach ben Yosef. And one is Mashiach ben David. Now... There's a machlokus of how the Mashiach comes, whether or not it's a miraculous thing, or whether or not it's just a normal time in which we recognize the Kodesh Baruch Hu more. And there's a variety of differences of the Mefarshim and why and how. We aren't going to go into all that. But most of the people talk about two kochos that exist in Am Yisrael, two strengths. One is the strength of Yosef, that's a physical strength, and one talks about the strength of Yehuda, which is a spiritual strength. And so when they talk about the period of the Mashiach, actually some of the people divide it into five periods. You have Mashiach ben Yosef, and then the son of the Mashiach ben Yosef, and you have Mashiach ben David, and the son of the Mashiach ben David, and then you have a time in which Kodesh Baruch Hu just rules directly, and everybody has a special text message on their telephone to tell them what to do. Whatever. And again, that's part of the problem of understanding what's supposed to happen. We have certain amount of nevuahs, but we don't know, we cannot put it into exact context. And we don't know whether or not it's a miraculous thing or some natural development. And like the Rambam says that it's a natural development, but the naturalness that we have now could certainly be looked at as a miraculous existence 100 or 200 or, you know, 1,000 years ago. Or the things that are available, could be perceived as being miraculous. And sometimes they are miraculous, and we just don't ask the right questions. So we have that exists. We also have the tribes that didn't show up. In passing, part of the Koach of Yosef comes from last week's Parsha. When Binyamin is born, it says, Melachim Mechutzecho Yetzei, before Binyamin is born, after Yaakov encounters Esau, he's given a blessing that says he will have children that will be kings, plural. And so that was an indication that Shaul comes from Binyamin, and there was an argument about whether they should go directly to David or whether or not Shaul's son, he had one son who was lame, whether he should become the king. Shaul's other sons were also killed with Shaul, and so one of the general Avner says, it says Melachim, it says plural, so therefore Shaul's son should become the king. But we have that kind of thing. But here, Ephraim and Manasseh. Now, if you look on the map, you have also Yisachar came. Yisachar and Zebulun have a relationship. Zebulun supports Yisachar in its learning. Yisachar, it says, like the elders of Yisachar are referred to as the heads of the Sanhedrin. The heads of the Sanhedrin oftentimes for a long period were from Yisachar. But also Manasseh, who was also in that close area. But we have tribes that didn't come to help. We have Dan. We have a little bit of Asher. And we have Reuven. Now, Reuven, also in this past parsha, we see that the characteristic of Reuven is on the other side of the Jordan. We see Reuven is oftentimes a character trait that is hesitant to participate. And he, over reflects. And that is also mentioned and related here. Dan, in this particular thing, also tries to cover his bets. And Devorah refers to him in very, very strong, sarcastic language. That Dan loaded his ships and basically said, if they win, fine. If not, we're out of here. And that is an attitude that sometimes occurs with people. And you see how Devorah deals with that attitude. In the fighting, the nature of the miraculous fight is described. The mountains, the mud, the rain. They talk about the fact that some of the people of Sisera's army jumped into the water and were eaten by the fish, and they said that this was a payback for not getting the Egyptians at the Red Sea. And again, it's a balance that those Mephoshim are talking about that they read into the Shira of Dvorah. There are some other parts, just quickly. There are 31 kings that are mentioned. Not mentioned. It says Shloshim Malachim in Pasuk Yotet, I think. But these were people, and it could either refer to kings that volunteered to come and fight with Yavin and Sisera, that were destroyed, and they came not because they wanted money, but because they voted that way in the UN. And they voted that way because they thought that they had a sure thing, and therefore they joined not as mercenaries, which was common in the time, but rather because they believed that the Jews were wrong. And they were defeated and destroyed. Other Mefarshim say that it talks about the first time that Yavin fought with Bnei Yisrael earlier with Yeshua. It talks about Yael. Now, it's Yael, the Gemara says that she may have put herself into a precarious position because she had Sisera come into her house, and she may have even been raped by him. But they talk about that putting herself in that position in this case was a good kind of thing. And she is praised, and it refers to the fact that she becomes a judge too. That's referenced in one of the psukim. And so there's a great deal of discussion about that. And the psukim, again, the poetic message is so beautiful. You really need to read it and reread it. And the multiplicity of Mefarshim are great. One of the final parts deals with Sisera's mother when he doesn't come home. And she's worried about her son, the murderer. And what do they say to comfort her? They say, oh, he's out raping and plunging and killing people. And that's also an important kind of message, because there's a certain amount of value in educational system that says that's where Sisera came from.